Morning News is brought to you by Sprague Sports on 32nd Street, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters and responsible gun ownership since 1956.
Weather is brought to you by Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros, with four locations to serve all of your tire needs.
If you're a fan of warm weather, you are in luck. The temperature's running warm all week long, near 90 today. Tomorrow, sunny, breezy, and just slightly cooler, 86. And then Wednesday, warming up, 88 the high. By speeding up the hiring process, Indeed puts the dash in dashboard. Use Instant Match to connect immediately with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Then use your dashboard to conduct interviews. Find out more at Indeed.com/credit. I'm meteorologist Terry Smith from the Weather Channel.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Good morning, Yuma. Welcome back to another episode of Life, Death, and Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. I'm in the studio today with the one and only Mr. Russ Clark. In the past, we've had Howard with us. He's with the Freedom Library, but he's not here today. We've been really focusing our energy lately, these last couple months, on constitutional issues. And when you think about it, every daily act that you do has to do with our Constitution in one way or another. Just the ability to... and it's odd that I'm even saying this, but 1 year ago when the pandemic was in full force, I would have never believed the idea that our citizenry would have been restricted to movement from their house. But that's exactly what happened about a year ago when we went into lockdown nationwide. And we weren't the only country, obviously, and there were other countries that went into lockdown. But that was the first time in my life that I'd ever experienced something where the government said, no, you can't go out unless you have some viable reason or that we deem viable, let's say. And it really, it's for your good and it's for everybody else's good. So just stay home or the sheriff might arrest you. That was odd to me. There were some that said, you know, that sounds reasonable. We don't want people to get hurt. If you contract COVID, you will die. That's what we heard. And now we've learned, you know, about a year later in retrospect, that's not actually the case. Some die, some don't. I did the stats last week. Governor Ducey issued an executive order canceling all COVID-related executive orders that he did before from March 11th, 2020 till the present time of last week, essentially saying, listen, go back to normal. Businesses should be 100% back to capacity. Churches, businesses. If you want to implement a face mask order on the private level, then you can do that. But basically what Governor Ducey was saying is, it's not my role as a government leader to mandate wearing a mask or any other restrictions on your rights and freedoms.
He would be right the way I look at it.
I think it was a knee-jerk reaction last year when this came about. And I think what we're experiencing now is people get tired of that. You start to find out, well, if you restrict somebody's rights to move, to assemble, to do the basic things, the God-given rights that were prescribed in our Constitution, if you do that long enough, we're going to react. And it's usually in a negative way towards those that are in political positions. We saw that happening when Gavin Newsom kept California locked down. And I have a brother in California. I've often talked about this before. And so I get to see firsthand, you know, the restrictions on that particular state in comparison to our state. Right. And over the pandemic, We were not as locked down. We never had a face mask mandate on the state level. We did on the county level. Tony, the county supervisor, the head of the county supervisors, he issued a proclamation back, I think it was June 6th, something like that, last year.
Yeah.
And basically did a mask mandate throughout the county. And that was in place until last week.
Well, that got stopped pretty much. I mean, the sheriff said, I will not enforce it.
But it wasn't on the books. Yeah. And just because the sheriff says he's not going to enforce it, you never know. Now you're stuck in a position, well, now you've got this county deity forcing us to wear face masks wherever we go. If you actually read the proclamation, Tony's a great guy.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was just...
He overstepped.
I think a lot of politicians did.
Yep.
And it never was canceled. I mean, I looked. Did they ever issue a cancellation of that really restrictive face mask order? No, they never did. But Governor Ducey's executive order last week canceled all statewide government-imposed face mask orders.
And some mayors are saying, I don't care what the governor says, I'm going to do mine. Well, they can't if the governor doesn't have an emergency. They can't just do it.
The governor in his executive order, and the text of that says, any such act or mandate on the county, city, or municipal level is unenforceable.
Right.
So the sheriff has no authority to arrest a person or to enforce that type of an order. So if you were driving around and you get outside of your car because you get pulled over for speeding, for example, and the officer says, put on a face mask, and you say, no, I'm not putting on a face mask. He cannot enforce a law in that particular county if there's one on the books, which in Yuma County there is. Still, they haven't issued a proclamation to cancel out that June 6th proclamation. And I talked to some of the board members, the Board of Supervisor members, and I said, listen, guys, you ought to issue a proclamation to cancel out that June 6th proclamation, because as it stands right now, it's still on the books. Yes, it's unenforceable. Yes, we are in a county in which the sheriff says, from the beginning, I'm not going to enforce that. That's ridiculous. However, you might have a rogue officer out there trying to make their name for themselves or for some other reason.
Of course, it would never get to the courts, but still, you'd have to go see a judge.
It's still a mess.
Yeah, and
it is still a mess. You've got to go through that process, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, in my personal opinion, I think the county ought to do a little bit of cleanup there. The reality is it's unenforceable. However, it's on the books in Yuma County, and if you don't wear a face mask outside your home, then essentially, or while you're driving, if you're driving by yourself, you don't have to wear a face mask. If you're driving with family, you don't have to wear a face mask. If you're driving with anybody else, you have to wear a face mask. And outside the home, you have to wear a face mask if you're in with other people other than your family. That's the way that the current proclamation in Yuma County works. And so the Board of Supervisors ought to pay attention to that and issue a proclamation. And I'm hoping they're going to meet here soon. I think if not this week, I think it's next week. And I think that might be one of the things that's on their agenda. So I understand that it was a knee-jerk reaction, but at this point in time, if you want to wear a face mask because you feel like you might be at risk or you're in that particular group that is susceptible more so than others to the COVID strain, then power to you. Wear a face mask. But I think my position is I do not want the government mandating to me what I do wear and what I don't wear. If I want to walk around without shoes on, that's my prerogative. In fact, my kids do that often. They rarely have shoes on. If I go to Circle K and they say, hey, Adam, you can't come in unless you have shoes on. Okay, I get that. Or they say, hey, Adam, you can't come in because you don't have a face mask on. Okay, that's your private establishment. Those are your rules. I don't agree with it necessarily, but I will, in order to get my thirst buster, I'll put my face mask on. Kind of thing. Or I could say the alternative. You know what? Chevron's across the street. They don't require me to wear a mask. I'm going to go there. So I get to choose where I get to go to frequent their establishment. And that's what we call capitalism. If I agree with the policy of a particular business, I can frequent that business and I can give them my money in exchange for services if I wish to. But I don't want them to have to feel like, well, you have to do this or else I'm going to get in trouble by Big Brother. Big Brother's watching me. The government's watching me, Adam. And if you come into my store without a face mask on, I'm going to get fined. And so I'm going to force you to wear a face mask. That's what I don't like. I don't like being held by gunpoint to do something if I don't want to do it. Last time I checked, this was United States of America, and we talk about the greatest country on earth. Why? Because we have freedoms to move about. We have the freedoms to assemble. We have the freedom to say, no, I'm not going to do that, or yes, I will do that because I have a particular feeling one way or another. But to be forced to do something, that's not the American way, especially from the government system. If you want to frequent an establishment because you agree with their morals and their standards, for example, Chick-fil-A, it blows my mind that even through thick and thin, it seems like Chick-fil-A, every time you go there, the line is around the street. What's awesome is that you get through Chick-fil-A so fast. You know, they've got a system, and they work that system very, very well. They put out a good product, they do good service, and they have particular morals and beliefs, and they stick to those morals and beliefs even in the face of controversy or what might not be considered politically correct nowadays. And if you agree with Chick-fil-A's philosophy, you go eat their chicken. If you don't, you don't. Maybe you go to Five Guys, who I don't know what their opinion is on anything, but I know that they get their potatoes from Washington most of the time, where my family came from. And I can see the farms that they get their potatoes from. So I go to Five Guys. Do I wear a mask? Most of the time, I don't. I think it's ridiculous for me to walk into an establishment wearing a mask just to take it off to eat. You know, I think that's just ridiculous. What's the matter? Aspiration-wise, I'm spitting into the air just the same as I'm eating as I am if I'm sitting or walking into the door. So, but what do I know? I'm not a scientist. We got to go to a break. This is Life, Death, and Law, 560 AM KBLU. We'll be right back after this.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Labor is a two-way street. First, it's earned. Second, it's paid. In the air conditioning business, it just went up 10% again. I tell my techs, let homeowners know about the York factory parts and labor warranties. An out-of-warranty AC part costs many times more than yesterday's AC parts did. Ask your AC tech about our York extended factory labor warranties.
Give Air Central a call or just log on to acyuma.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hansen. This is 560 AM KBLU. I'm in the studio today with the one and only Mr. Russ Clark. He's pushing buttons, turning dials, and it looks like Willy Wonka's factory in here. I don't even know what he's doing anymore, but man, he's doing his best to make me sound good, and it's a tough job, but you're doing your best, and I commend you for that. Prior to the break, we were talking about, did you hear my voice crack right there? I guess I'm 14 years old.
I tried
nowadays
to catch it. But, yeah.
We were talking about some of the issues with face masks and Governor Ducey's last executive order last week and the constitutional issues therein that we've experienced through this pandemic. One of the biggest things that I thought was really alarming this last week in the news was a case out of Hawaii. And I don't know, Russ, if you talked a little bit about gun rights last segment in your in your show. And I wanted to jump off of that because it's really been top of mind for me. I'm in the the mindset that it's my birthday coming up. And so I think to myself, self, what do I want this year? And for my birthday, my wife said, oh, this is what I'm thinking about getting you. And I'm like, oh, great. You know, how do I kindly say, I don't want that. I want this. If you're listening, Jessica, I'm just kidding. No. But we talk about this all the time. She's like, you're so hard. You're so particular. I'm like, I'm not particular. Just save yourself the stress. I don't want to be surprised. I don't want, you know, this, because so often you'll get me something that, you know, that's great and all, but I probably don't have a use for that or something like that. But this year, she hit it right on the head. She said, oh, well, that's too bad. I was like, why? What do you think about getting me? Well, I don't want to tell you. I wanted to be surprised. I don't want to be surprised. Just tell me. Honestly,
you don't
just
want
tell
a surprise?
Me. Yeah. I don't like surprises because the surprise is not good most of the time. Yeah. And now I got my hopes up.
Surprise. We got you something you don't like.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Another great tie with Goofy on it or something that I won't wear. But she said, no, I was thinking about getting you a 3D printer. And I was like, what? Oh, you got
like
it.
That. You like that?
Yeah. I think those are interesting. I don't know much about them, obviously, but I'm down with that. I've always, what I'm more interested in at this particular juncture, mainly because of the Biden administration's outright vocalness on restricting the rights of the citizenry to carry guns against the Second Amendment rights that we have. They have been very vocal, and you played a clip during the last...
Of Joe Biden.
Right, during the last segment.
I'm coming for your guns, bingo.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and he means it.
What a softball interview, by the way. Where are you playing? I'm like, he's totally leading the guy.
Of course.
But anyway, was it Anderson Cooper sounded like? I don't know who it was, but that's what it sounded like. Having said that, there are those in the Biden administration circle that have been in his ear and really, really pushing the assault rifle ban.
Mm-hmm.
And this has come up before. It happened in the 90s at a particular junction. But the Bush administration let that lapse, Bush Jr. And so it has happened before. However, it's never been taken to the level that we experienced in that interview that he was talking about, where we might be coming for your guns. What that means is that if there is some sort of tattletale out there that says, Russ, I know that Russ Clark in his safe at home, he's got an assault rifle. We went shooting with it the other day out at the range. And you might have bought that assault rifle at Spreggs, you've got a registration number. And so not only are you on the books, because Spreggs is audited from time to time by the...
Federal government's not supposed to have access to that for those reasons. Of course, we all know they lied to us, but okay.
That's right. And because they do have access to that, and this is happening every week. Right. There was a case last week where the FBI raided a guy's house because he bought a coat hanger. And so if you're up on this kind of stuff, what's been happening is, as technology advances and people are able to experiment at home using 3D printers or using what are called CNC machines, that's kind of like a drill bit that's computerized. So yeah. I can design something in a CAD program online, or I can actually download the design of a assault rifle, what's called a lower receiver. So the lower receiver is the part that has a trigger, and that is actually the firearm. It has a serial number that's attached to it. And so if I go to Spreggs and I say, hey, Richard, I want to buy a lower receiver from such and such company.
They sell them.
Yeah. He can say, okay, I'll order that for you, Adam. It should be about 3-4 months down the road.
And you fill out the paperwork just as if it were a firearm complete, not just a piece.
That's right. But in reality, it's just a chunk of metal.
Yeah.
But it does have the capability of being assembled into an assault. No, I shouldn't say an assault rifle. I don't know why I said that. It's not an assault
into
rifle.
Into a firearm.
Yeah. An AR-15, for example, which is not an assault rifle.
That's the most common.
Yeah, an AR-15, very, very common. And so I can go to Spreggs and I can say, this is what I want. Richard orders that for me. Maybe I'll get it in 3 to 4 months. But in that process, he has to do a background check on me. Mm-hmm. He has to do certain things, and he has to register the serial number that was stamped on that particular lower receiver at the manufacturer's plant. Whether that's in Texas or it's here in Arizona from Ruger, for example, up in Prescott. However, I'm on the books. It says Adam Hansen went through a background check on this particular date. He passed that check, and he is now in possession, or at least we sold him A lower receiver that had this stamped fire serial number on it. Okay, so now the government knows who has those, and so I don't like that idea, especially when the Biden administration, prior to even getting in, and even during the Obama administration, this was a common theme. They constantly said, "Oh no, we're not going for your guns. We're not going for." Now they just say, "No, we're going for your guns." You know, if you have an assault, if you have an AR-15, we might be coming. If we get knowledge of that, and to think that that won't happen is is actually kind of ludicrous.
Oh, they're definitely going to,
because it's already happening. Yeah. And if you're paying attention or you're looking, you can just do a simple Google search of 3D printed guns. If they get knowledge, they being the federal government, the BATFE, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Enforcement.
And they're not supposed to have a copy of it. It's supposed to go to a separate deal, but we know it does. They do have access because they did it in New Orleans during Katrina. They went out and confiscated guns based on those registrations that they're not supposed to do.
Last year, there was a company that cropped up on the internet, and they were selling a coat hanger. It was a 3D printed coat hanger, but in reality, what this thing was, well, what it could be used for was you drop it in. It's called a sear, S-E-E-R, and you take an AR-15, and you take this little device, and you stick it in there in a certain way, and now it goes from semi-automatic, meaning every time I pull the trigger, a bullet fires, to once full I pull auto? The trigger and hold it, it's full auto. And so that's called a sear, and that's illegal. You cannot possess one of those, and that itself has its own serial number, and only those that have certain licenses are able to possess one of those.
Right.
And machine guns are illegal unless you have a certain license and you've paid a certain, what's called a tax.
They're legal with a permit. Yes.
Right. And so last year, a company cropped up and they were selling coat hangers that were 3D printed. But in actuality, if you dismantled them in a couple, in a certain way, you could use one side of them and drop it into an AR-15. And now you just went full auto, which is illegal. In the eyes of the federal government, they did a search warrant on this particular company. They raided it and they got all the books and all the clients, all the IP addresses of all those individuals that bought those coat hangers.
Oh, geez.
Last week, there was a YouTube video that cropped up on the internet of, it was a guy. He has his little, I mean, to think that people don't have cameras in their house right now is ridiculous, but all it is a video of the FBI with a no-knock warrant, and I'll talk about that in just a minute, but they bust open the door, and they come blazing in. There were 25 agents that came into this house, and it's the view that I saw was in the living room, and so there's some stairwells with one of those gates to keep the infants from going up and falling down the stairs. There is a baby bouncy seat, you know, in view. And you've got these 25 agents, and on their backs and on their fronts, it's like FBI, CIA. So you have all these agencies. Lo and behold, what happened was this guy was one of those people that bought on the internet a coat hanger, that what was branded as a coat hanger that was 3D printed by this company that they seized the records of last year. And so they busted this guy's door in without a warrant. They had a no-knock warrant.
Okay.
And so they busted this door in. He wasn't home, luckily, or his wife or his family. But then they go on and they proceed. And so he has everything on camera of these 25 agents going through his house. They ransacked the house. They got into the peanut butter jars. They dumped everything out looking for this coat hanger.
And tell me, does this guy have a long criminal record?
He has no criminal record. In fact, he doesn't even own an AR-15, come to find out. And through this process, you see these agents and you can hear them too, because it's all on record. And so the guy's like, I'll post this to YouTube so everybody can see what's going on here. And they're talking about, oh, I bet you the kid has a peanut allergy, and they're using the same gloves. They're teasing and laughing about, oh, I'm using the same gloves to go through this peanut butter, and the kid probably has a peanut butter allergy. Where's the dog? They're all concerned about a dog. The dog happened to be outside, luckily, mm-hmm. Because it was a pit bull.
And it might have got harmed.
Yeah, they probably would have killed it. And that's actually happened before. So no-knock warrants are one of my biggest fears. Why? Because if you're woken up, the way a no-knock warrant works is you go to a judge and you say, Judge, these are the facts that we have. This guy, he has this potential of creating an AR-15, making it into a machine gun because he bought this product. And we have evidence that he brought this product, and Judge, we need to get in there and get it before he destroys it. So now you've created this expediency in the judge's mind, and the judge is like, yeah, get in there and get that. We don't want people making machine guns, you know? We definitely don't want them to destroy that because that's what the law says.
If he had $250, he could just buy a permit for it. It's not like it's a nuclear bomb. It could be completely legal. A lot of people legally have them.
So a no-knock warrant, once that's issued, the way that they work, well, the way that they're usually implemented is the law enforcement agency will arrive at the house, and it's called a no-knock because they don't have to knock. Whereas with a normal warrant, there's quite the process. It takes a couple of days to get a warrant. You really have some facts to prove.
And then you show it to them. You serve them.
You have to, yeah. And once you have the warrant, then you go to the house, you knock, you identify yourself. And then they're in the warrant itself, it says these are the restrictions that that they have.
Right.
They can search these particular areas. And so there, it's a more formal process. With a no-knock, they kick in the door. Or they sneak in, which is very, very, to me, that's what's the wildest thing. And they usually do these no-knock warrants. They want the element of surprise. So it'll be like 4 a.m, or it'll be, you know, midnight. They're trying to catch these perpetrators off guard, and that's why they do a no-knock. And the idea is that, well, we're doing this because there's an expediency that the evidence might be destroyed, number one. Number two, this person has the potential of creating great harm for us, and we want to be out of harm's way. So we need to do it early in the morning or late at night such that they're probably going to be asleep. Well, this happened last year, and to another individual up in Massachusetts who is part of the, how do you say this, Russ? Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's like the Boogaloo movement or something like that.
I heard about those guys. I think that's right, the Boogaloos.
And what they were about was, or are about, they still are, they're big Trump fans. And basically what they were saying was that we have a right to possess firearms.
Sure.
And if we want to put together a militia, we can do that to enforce the constitutional rights that we have. And so there was a lot of chatter online about that, and there was a group.
So they did a no-knock on him because you were in the club?
Yeah, this particular guy, I think it was Massachusetts. I'll have to look that up again. But we'll talk about that right when we come back. This is Life, Death, and Law, 560 AM KBLU.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Listen to Sean Hannity weekdays from noon to 3 right here on 560 AM KBLU. Sean Hannity's brought to you by Liberty Motorsports on Arizona Avenue for all the best motorsports products in the industry, plus your service needs since 1981.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Law. This is 560 AM KBLU. I'm attorney Adam Hansen from Deason, Garner, and Hansen Law Firm. We helped the Yuma community for years. I mean, going back more than 45 years, we've helped our community in the area of estate planning law. And what that consists of is helping families plan for the inevitable, really. It might be incapacity, but it definitely is when you pass away. If you don't have a plan set up, then I encourage you to go online, visit our website. You can go to DeasonGarnerLaw.com or Yuma.law. Either of those web addresses will get you to the same spot. Cruise our website and set up an appointment, because I want to talk to you. I want to make sure that your family is set up the way you want them to be set up. I often meet with people who say, Adam, I don't have an estate. You know, I've got my bank accounts. I've got my house. I've got my car. I've got this, that, or the other, but I don't have an estate. I think that's a common misconception. When people think of the word estate, I think they're thinking, well, I'm not this huge billionaire or something like that. That's not the case at all. You have stuff, and that stuff, if you don't legally deal with it now while you're alive and well, becomes a very big challenge to deal with by somebody else that you dish that out on when you become incapacitated or you pass away. We're here to help you with that, and it's not as difficult as you might think. That's what our job is to take the difficulty out of it and to make it where you have these delineated steps. Just follow our advice, follow our guide, and we're going to help you through holding your hand and get something set up so that if something were to happen to you, everything's ready to rock and roll and the plan is implemented. And that's such a comfort to people to know that, hey, I've got things in order. This happened just last week. We were on a date, my wife and I, and she said, and we talked about, I don't know how it came up.
On a date?
Yeah, it often does. You know, we go out on a date every week.
Oh, and, what do you want this marriage to last or something?
Yeah, I would try, you know, for the kids. No,
oh, good.
No, she's my best friend, and I want to be with her all the time. And so we love being together, and that might mean that as we're on a date, we might get hit by a semi truck and not come home. And so something to those points came up during our conversation. We were driving away from the house, leaving the kids to babysit, and it came up, and I said, well, it's okay, we got everything in order, you know, you don't have to worry. And that peace of mind that if something happened to us, somebody's in the hopper to come in and step in to take care of the kids was such a comfort to me. And it can be a comfort to anybody. You might have planning in place already, but maybe it's time to pull it out, dust it off, and take a look at it. Oftentimes what I find is people will have planning in place, but it's not doing what they thought it was doing, number one. Or number two, it has people in it that maybe they don't want in there anymore, kind of thing. So there's all sorts of reasons to pull that out. Even changes in the law might be one of those reasons. And so we're here to help you with that. We'll give you a free consultation. Come sit down with myself or with Sean, and we can look through what you got. If you have something, if you don't, let's put something together so that you don't need to worry anymore about if something were to happen to you, what's going to go on. So getting back to what we were talking about right before the break, we were talking about these no-knock warrants, which I was expressing my opinion to Russ over the break about. This is one of my greatest fears. I mean, some people fear snakes. Some people fear heights. I fear no-knock warrants because I've seen them end in tragedy more often than not. In fact, almost every case ends in tragedy. I explained the situation that a no-knock warrant is one of expediency. So what you're saying is, Judge, we've got such an expedient situation here that such that evidence is going to be tampered with if we do not get into that particular house, or this person has a propensity for violence and could actually hurt us. And so we need to drop in on them by surprise. Therefore, we need
like
this no-knock warrant.
A drug lord or a you know, those kind of things, which, you know, there's people out there that have, they're criminal, like gangsters and stuff, you know, and I understand it at that point where they're highly dangerous, but you're telling me they're doing it because this guy received something on the internet.
Right.
That's crazy.
And that was just last week. But last year, a guy was killed in this particular manner, you know, and I, reading through these tragic cases, I'm thinking that could be me. It could be you. Why? Because if somebody comes barging into my house at 3 o'clock in the morning and it's pitch black dark, I'm woken up from sleep, I'm coming out guns a-blazing. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the police. You don't care at that particular point because I don't know who you are. Even if you're saying you're the police, I don't believe you. Because to me, a reasonable policeman would not come to my house at 3 o'clock in the morning and wake me up unless something was really seriously wrong. And that's the problem. If you're the subject of a no-knock warrant, you don't even know about it. And most of the time, you're probably living your life thinking, hey, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I don't need to be woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning by the police because I'm not a bad person. I didn't do anything wrong such that I need to be pointed guns at or woken up or treated like I'm going to go on a mass murder spree or something like that. I'm not that person. So, but to the federal government, sometimes you are. If you buy a 3D printed coat hanger, you could be that person. And that's actually what's happening right now. And so for the Biden administration to say, we're coming for your guns, that's what they mean, Russ. They mean they're going to implement no-knock warrants, and they're already doing it. They're getting lists of people that have bought these products online, because when you buy something online, guess what? There's a paper trail. You use a particular credit card to do that. So they're going to find the credit card records. They're going to track you down. Oh, yeah. They're going to use your IP address. And so one of two things is going to happen. They're going to show up at your door, and they're going to say, Adam, we know that you bought this coat hanger, and we know that you're using it as to make your AR-15 an automatic weapon. And if I can do one of two things there, I can say,
and that's pretty thin no. evidence.
I can say no, and they're going to say, now they've got me for lying because they know I bought it. There is a trail that says that I bought that, but now they have to prove intent. Did I buy the coat hanger, the 3D printed coat hanger, with the intent to create a fully automatic weapon
illegally?
And that's where you shut up. Okay, that if you're listening, shut up. And even if you're law enforcement, and I've got tons of law enforcement friends, they'd probably be the first one to tell you, not while they're on duty, but off duty, you just shut up. Say, I need an attorney. I cannot talk to you without an attorney. I need an attorney. I need an attorney. Well, we know that you bought it, so you might as well just fess up. And they're going to go through a line of questioning. They're going to try and make you feel bad because you're not talking. Or they're going to get you talking. They're going to try and get you talking. And that's their job. And I respect that when it's dealing with a criminal. But when it's me, and I'm not, because I bought a 3D printed coat hanger off the internet.
But most criminals will shut up anyway because they've already been through the system many times.
They're the ones that know.
You know, they know.
It's you and I that are like
dummies like us.
You're trying to prove to them that you're not a bad person. And so you talk. And the whole time, anything you're saying, they're going to use against you. That's part of the Miranda rights, right? Does that sound familiar? Anything you say or do can be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, one will be provided to you. There's a reason for those Miranda rights. Miranda came out of Arizona through the Supreme Court in, 1965 or 8 or something like that? And that was the Miranda was a horrible person.
Yeah, it was a phoenix.
He was a nasty person.
Yeah.
And he was what they consider an indigent person. And so he barely knew English. He was a Hispanic individual who raped and murdered a little girl, and he got caught. And so through that process, the police, they questioned him hard, and he confessed in that particular confession.
But they threw it all out because...
And so as that case went its way through the court system, it ultimately ended with the Supreme Court, and that's what we know as today as the Miranda rights, because in that court opinion, the Supreme Court said, as individuals, when you're confronted by police, we have certain rights. We have the right to remain silent, and we need to know those rights, because when the police stop us or detain us, they now, if they don't do that, if they don't Mirandize you, and then anything that you say to them after that point, if they never Mirandized you, if they didn't tell you what your rights were, then it can't be used in a court of law. It's what we call fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine. And because once it's tainted, it can't be cured if you weren't Mirandized nowadays. But back then, obviously, it didn't exist until the Miranda case went through. And basically, the court said, well, this guy, he barely knew English. He didn't know what his rights were. And the police had a duty to tell him that. And because they didn't, throw all the evidence out. They ended up getting him from other stuff. But ultimately, that's where the Miranda rights came. And so when we're Mirandized, you have a right to remain silent. And I highly suggest any interaction you have with the police that you do that. Do not talk to those police. This came up in my life. I'm just going to put it out there. I don't consider myself a big criminal, but when I was going to Arizona State as a young kid, during the summers, I would do construction work with some of my buddies that we lived together in the apartment. And basically what we did was we'd drive around the Phoenix Valley for a subcontractor, and we had this little Bobcat machine, and we had a trailer and a dump truck. And we would go from site to site all over the Phoenix Valley, from Surprise over to Glendale down to, you know, Chandler out to Queen Creek, wherever the jobs were, where we were doing, where we had the contracts to go pick up tile. The roofers would come in, they would roof the roof the condos or the houses, and then they just toss that tile off the roof and it just piles up into a pile. So my job during the summer while I was going to Arizona State to make money to pay for the next semester was to go out, go all through the valley and pick that stuff up with my buddies. Well, one particular day I had to re-register for the next upcoming semester. And so my boss is like, Adam, I get that. You're going to be late. You know, we usually start really early because it's hot. And he's like, just go to the yard, grab the truck that was towing a trailer with the Bobcat on it, and just meet the guys over at the next job site. And I was like, okay. So I did all that stuff. I ran over to the yard after I got done with my ASU stuff, registration, and jumped in the truck. Keys were in it, and pulled out. And I started driving down the road, you know, maybe like 25 miles an hour. Because at the time in Chandler, I was going down a Chandler road going southbound, and it was there was tons of construction going on, so I could only go like 20, 25 just because of all the speed issues that were there. And I'm just making my way, you know, almost to the job site. And all of a sudden, this bike cop comes behind me and pulls me over. And he's like, you know why I pulled you over? No, I honestly don't. I mean, I was going under the speed limit because I'm a big vehicle and I'm trying to be safe. He's like, oh, well, that Bobcat on your trailer, it's not tied down enough. It's not secure. I'm like,
did it fall off?
No, it's got chains. It's chained down. He's like, there's too much play in these chains. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, it's chained. It's not going anywhere. And he tells me this story about how it could fall off the trailer and all stuff. I'm like, listen, that's really subjective. But I'm a kid, you know, and this is an officer. And so I'm like, I'm not trying to be defiant. I'm just trying to do what he says and trying to talk sense into the guy. Like, really, I can see the chains. They're tied down. And there is little play, but so what? You know, it's not going off. It's impossible physically for this to fall off the trailer. Well, he writes me up. And guess what? Because of the vehicle that I was driving, it was a, what do you call it? I don't know if it was a felony or whatever. It was like a felony traffic citation.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll talk about that a little bit more when we come back. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU. We'll be right back.
Have a question? Our phone lines are open. Call 344-5258. That's 344-KBLU.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
Hope lives here in California. But during these challenging times, we could all use a little extra support. Visit calhope.org for free COVID-19 emotional support resources or call our warm line at 1-833-317-4673.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM KBLU. I'm attorney Adam Hansen. I'm in the studio today with the one and only Mr. Russ Clark, and I'm about to disclose to the general public my felony traffic citation.
Man, that's
that happened
amazing
to me when I was a kid at ASU. Prior to break, I talked about how I got cited. I was driving this big truck that was pulling a trailer that had a Bobcat. If you're not aware of what that is, it's like a little tractor that has a bucket on it. And during my ASU days, as I was going to school during the summers, I would work for a subcontractor whose job it was to go from job site to job site. And we just picked up tile that the roofers threw onto the ground in piles. We would put that in the dump truck, take it to the dump. That's all we did all day, you know, We would take those piles, put it in the dump truck, go to the dump, go to the dump, and then we'd go to another site. And that was just during the summers, and I would earn money to pay for the next semester's schooling at Arizona State. Well, during this process, one day I was driving to a job site, and I was driving this big truck that was pulling a trailer with the Bobcat, and I got pulled over by a bike cop, and he gave me the one over. You know, he just went to town. Well, do you have this on the trailer? Yeah, I mean, it's right there. Oh, I don't know. That wiring's a little, you know, he just went the whole nine yards. I'm like, but it is working. You know, it's too loose. This is too loose. That's too loose, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, all right, man, can you just hurry up here? I'm a kid. I'm going to get fired.
You a felony ticket.
Well, I didn't know that. It's just a traffic ticket to me. Wow. But come find out, especially when I went to law school or I went to go sit for the bar, I have to disclose 10 years of that kind of stuff.
Did you get it thrown out?
I did not. So that's the part of the story I want to talk about when it comes to law enforcement. So I show up the day of the court hearing, and I show up in like my work clothes. I'm filthy because I'm thinking this is ridiculous. It's a waste of my time that I have to take time away from my work. I need to work so I can earn money to keep paying for school. And I was like, whatever. So I show up the day of the hearing. I was working, stopped what I was doing, went to the courthouse in Chandler or Gilbert. I don't remember which one it was. And I go in there and I was like, Your Honor, you know, this is my situation. I'm going to Arizona State full time. This is what I do during the summers. And here's the cop had taken pictures of everything. I said, you can see in the pictures, like it's chained down. He just didn't like that there was too much play in it and those chains. And the judge said, well, I need to go, you know, look this over. So he leaves. And then I have a prosecutor on the other side. You know, I'm by myself, not realizing that, oh.
It's real trouble.
Well, I just didn't realize, you know, that I could bring somebody like an attorney to this particular forum. To me, it's just like a traffic ticket. I'm like, this is ridiculous anyway. So it's not a big deal to me. And so I'm sitting there, and the prosecutor comes over. He's like, man, this sucks, you know. I was like, I know. I was like, I don't really care, you know. I just want to get back to work. And I was like, you know, my boss said he's going to pay the ticket anyway. It's just not a big deal if it actually goes through and whatever. And so he's like, yeah, I get it, you know. The prosecutor's telling me this. And we're just kind of hitting it off, talking about this, that, and the other. And I'm telling him these things. And then the judge comes back in. The prosecutor walks back over to his podium. He says, Your Honor, Adam here says that he doesn't really care about what's going on here. He doesn't really have any moral obligation to our public. And that, but he just goes off on me. And he said his employer could care less too. And then he's just going to pay the fine anyway. And the judge is like, okay. And just hits the gavel. And I got this, it went through, you know, and I'm like, whoa, just happened? You acted like you're my friend, and then you just like threw me in the bus. And from that moment on, I'm like, I'm never talking again to law enforcement. And that was just my particular situation. But then you go through law school, and it's just a reality. You have a right to remain silent.
But is that ethical for a prosecutor to do that?
Yeah.
It is? They can do that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The cops can lie to us. And the Supreme Court says that. They don't have to tell us the truth. They can say, well, so-and-so told us that this is, we got you on this. So you might as well just confess.
So loose change, what did it cost your employer? A couple hundred bucks? Or?
No, I think it was like $3,500 citation.
$3,500?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that sucked.
And you had it tied down the way that you were shown, the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah, I just, I jumped in the truck. I walked around the truck real quick, you know, because I was rushing to the site. I saw the chains were tied down. They were tied down, and so, they weren't going anywhere.
Any felony implications for you? Can you vote?
Yeah, I can still vote. Nothing really happened. It was a traffic. They delineated it as a felony traffic citation or something like that. I think it would be different if it was some other felony, but it was a traffic-oriented thing.
Holy moly! So they got $3,500 out of your employer.
Yeah, I felt bad for the guy.
What a terrible thing.
So having said all that, these no-knock warrants are super scary. I wanted to talk a lot about gun rights today. There is a case that came out last week in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is our circuit. If you're not familiar with how that works, on the federal level, there's district courts in every state, Hawaii being one of those, Arizona being one of those. And the district court is a federal court. So you're going to federal court when it's either a controversy between states or businesses,
or lost, federal issue.
A federal issue such as gun rights. Gun rights, immigration, those are federal issues that get done in the federal courts. And in Hawaii, they had passed a law back in 2010 or 11, basically restricting the gun rights of all of its citizens. All those that live in Hawaii, they have to, in order to carry a gun, and not even a, even if you have a concealed carry license, it says something like, it requires that the residents seeking a license to openly carry a firearm in public must demonstrate the urgency or the need to carry a firearm, must be of good moral character, and must be, quote, engaged in the protection of life and property, end quote. So that was the premise of the law in Hawaii. Well, there is a guy named George Young who had applied for a firearm carry license twice in 2011, but was denied because ultimately has to go through the local law enforcement agency, and they kept denying the guy's application. And he kept saying that, or they kept denying it, saying that he didn't have the urgency or the need to openly carry a firearm in public. Well, this was back in 2011, and it just hit the court system. You know, through the time, it went through the court system, and now we're in 2021. Last week was the appeals court hearing it, and basically what they said was that they sided with the court in Hawaii, saying that, no, you know, this is constitutional, that Hawaii has a right to restrict the ability of their citizens of when and when they can and when they cannot openly carry a firearm. And so obviously this is a big deal because if Hawaii does it, especially in our Ninth Circuit, we're in the Ninth Circuit with Hawaii, California. So a lot of us pertain to that. So that's a blanket rule for all of us right now. And if in reality, California or Arizona, we would have to implement the law like Hawaii's for that to actually have precedent. But right now, you know, we don't have such a law, and so it's not really, it doesn't mean that.
But there's
we
a
have
law
to
in Arizona that you can openly carry.
There is, yeah.
So,
but if that were to change, theoretically, the Ninth Circuit Court now bound us to that type of a law, saying, no, that's constitutional.
Most the likely, state has a right to take away your Second Amendment.
Most likely it won't hold water once it gets to the actual Supreme Court. Keep in mind, this was the appellate court. The next step is the final step, which is the Supreme Court.
Because there's been tons of cases where the Supreme Court has upheld the Second Amendment.
This happened back in, I think it was 2007, something like that, in the Heller case. 2008 was when the Heller case was actually decided, but D.C., the District of Columbia, had a very similar law. They basically said, you can't have a firearm outside of your house. And if you have it in your house, it has to be dismantled. The magazine has to be out of it, and you have to have a gun trigger lock. And so the individual, the guy was a police officer. His name was Heller. His last name was Heller. He said, what the, you know, I'm a police officer. Surely. And so he had applied for a license, you know, to have a firearm because he's a police officer, and it kept getting denied. And so he sued, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, that's where they really laid out the Second Amendment doctrine. And it's, I'm so thankful for Heller because the Heller case enumerated on the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is very kind of straightforward and vague. We have a right to bear arms, you know, and we have a right to organize a militia. But what the Heller case said was it gives us the historical context of our rights to bear arms. And it says that a lot of legal scholars and a lot of people, the argument is that the right to bear arms is inseparable from the militia clause of that Second Amendment. And they said they're completely distinct. The right to bear arms does not have to do with a militia. We have a right to bear arms, especially in our homes, for self-defense. That's what the Heller case said. And then ultimately in the McDonald case of 2010, they just reiterated that fact. And so if this case from coming out of Hawaii, Young versus Hawaii, makes it to the Supreme Court, that's the next step if they keep pushing the issue. But it's most likely the Supreme Court will negate what the Ninth Circuit said.
Well, it sounds like the Heller case is in conflict with what the Ninth Circuit just said.
It is.
Okay.
And so here's an article that I was sent yesterday by a family member of mine, if I can pull this up real quick here.
And I'm sure the Ninth Circuit's aware of the Heller case.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, they're well aware of it. Yeah. It's in San Francisco. That's part of the problem. Let's see here. So this goes on. This article says, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, the Firearm Industry Trade Association, rejects the legal gymnastics of the 7-4 en banc panel, U.S. Court of Appeals, Ninth Circuit, that just came out last week, employed to rule the Second Amendment does not guarantee the right to bear arms outside the home. The court's ruling on Young versus Hawaii ignores the clear and simple language of the Second Amendment and the U.S. Constitution and the U.S. Supreme Court precedent of the landmark 2008 Heller decision and the 2010 McDonald decision, which displayed the exact opposite findings. So it was very rogue of the Ninth Circuit to do that. We'll see what plays out. The problem is, in order to go to the next level, you still have to have funds to do that. You have to pay the attorneys
and
all
time,
that kind of stuff.
And they have to decide.
It's such a mess. So I hope that this young individual, by the last name of Young in Hawaii, I hope he keeps pushing forward to the Supreme Court.
And they'll probably get some sponsors.
That's the hope.
To help out.
Yeah, that's the hope. We'll talk to you next week. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed,
please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
From the 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating Studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.